Welcome to Photography Insights, the show that interviews people in the photography world. For episode 64, we have a talented street photographer, blogger, and YouTuber. It's the one and only John Hughes. Now, John has his origins in the world of film, and at the age of 13, he was labelled as a street photographer. His journey has led him to regularly writing blog articles, running workshops, and doing one-to-one sessions. He's an advocate of simple and effective technology like the Nimble Ricoh GR2. He talks to us about some of his work projects, where he loves shooting, where his influences have come from, and more. John also manages to face our elusive random questions. So find out why he wants to punch me and who has the social media handle nailedup.com. Please remember, anyone visiting the website flogger.co.uk will get to see the extra content, like the image we discussed about the dog and links to some of the items we discussed in the show. But before I leave you to listen to John, please do remember to support the show by sharing with your friends and leaving a review on iTunes. It's always a pleasure to hear when somebody likes the content that you put out. So let's play the intro and introduce your host, Andrew Walmsley. And welcome today with our lovely one and only John Hughes.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me. thank you for asking.
No, that's cool. Obviously, we've been in contact a while now. Was it Barney, wasn't it?
It was. It was Barney, yeah. Barney, young photographer that I work sometimes part-time for Jessup's. And that's how I got to know Barney. And you've had a fantastic photographer on, and now you've got me, because Barney's going to be one of those names that, you know, 10 years from now we're going to be buying his books. I'm convinced of it. He's not only is a really humble photographer, but he's just such a genuine nice guy. So that was how he won the Kodak competition. He's a great guy. I'm glad that he put us together, and then you approached me with the Facebook page that we're now trying to figure out what we're going to do with.
Mutual passion there, mate, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah, definitely.
I think Barney's been mentioned on so many podcasts, just obviously briefly like this, but it's like unbelievable. He's like the silent partner or something of this podcast now.
How is it an 18-year-old has got the influence that Barney's got?
It was amazing, because when we were judging, Andy Church from Kodak Alaris was sort of had five pictures in mind, and I said, let me just give you a bit of background about some of these people, and I said, look at this lad. I said, he's 18, and he was like, Jesus.
Yeah.
I was like, I know. I said, this is why I think you should consider this. And I let him pick. The second one, he really favoured over my choice. And so, you know, it was very fair. And it's been really good, because, you know, Ban has been really nice. And the good news is, fingers crossed, I might get to meet him.
Oh, that would be pretty epic.
Yeah. One of my mates from LA, he's been on the show a couple of times, co-hosted with me. He's flying into the country on December 4th to Heathrow.
Okay.
So
took the day off and I'm going to drive down just to meet him at the airport before he jumps back on his next flight home. And then the idea is on the way back, I'm going to pop into Cambridge and see him.
Oh, brilliant. Well, give me a shout because, well, by hold of it, you mean Bury, not Cambridge, or is Barney going to come up to Cambridge?
He said Cambridge is near.
He's in Bury St Edmunds, same as me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're going to come up here to meet Barney, give me a shout because the three of us can meet up.
Okay, that's sorted then, mate. Yeah, so that's December the 4th.
Cool. I'll make sure that we got... But for those of you who can't, because obviously I can see what Andrew's doing. Andrew is drinking sticky toffee pudding beer. Has anyone, is it just me or does that seem strange?
Well, a previous guest from America, I was drinking the same stuff and I showed him and he went, I don't even know what sticky toffee is, Andy. Sticky toffee pudding, because it's a local thing to the UK, isn't it?
Yeah, I suppose it is. Damn.
So trying to explain that, the mush of pudding up into a drink, I mean, it sounds awful.
Yeah, it really does, actually.
But seriously, I've never had a beer, and I love real ale. I try loads of different ales, and I've never had an ale that actually tastes like food before.
And that one does.
The weird thing is it actually smells like it as well.
Okay. I might have to see if I can find one. But no, that just seems really bizarre. Mind you, those, what's the Halloween beers? The pumpkin spice ones and that, they're a bit as well. But
I'm not worth trying.
Absolutely.
Oh, part of the fun. You're giving away my secrets now.
I know. Sorry.
That's all right. So I think it'd probably be an idea for everyone to catch up who you are, where you come from. So do you want to talk about how you got into photography and then what led you into street?
Sure. I mean, photography for me was, I was 12 years old. I've always, I guess, from a very young age, I've always been into movies and I still am. Still a huge movie geek, and so I was always intrigued by certain films and the way they look, but I never, obviously being young, I never really understood about it. And then we went up to my middle school, my upper school here in Bury St Edmunds, and we were taken around the school and we were taken to this dark, dank, damp room, and the smell in there was and I had no idea what the hell it was. And then we got told it was a dark room. What's a dark room? And I met this teacher come out, Mr. Littlewood, and he explained what it was, and I was just intrigued in, I wanted to know more about this room and what you did in there. So when the following term, when I went up to the school, first thing I did was I signed up for photography. And I'll never forget that first hour I spent in that room on that lesson. It just intrigued me. I wasn't, the strange thing about it was I wasn't interested in taking pictures. I was interested in the process after you've taken them. And yeah, from there, it just, my love for everything photography just started growing from there. The street photography aspect of it came from an assignment we had. We'd gone up to London, and we, as you go up to London, Mr. Littlewood would have the little 35 millimeter cartridges, and he'd load in, I think it was 24, 26 shots. And we had 6 hours in the city, and our assignment was churches and cathedrals.
Okay.
And make sure, you know, you take your time, you get your exposure correct, don't waste your shots. I mean, anybody that knows anything about, anybody that shoots with 35 millimeter or medium format knows that, you know, there's always that thing in the back of your head, this costs money.
Yes. Yeah.
And so Mr. Littlewood always used to sort of teach us that. And anyway, we had the day, we're on the coach coming back, and it was over the course of nearly 2 weeks of producing the your contact, developing the film, producing your contact sheet, and then doing the prints. And we'd done all of this, we printed everything, and gone back into the classroom for the next lesson, and all the photographs were all the way around the room. And it was like, spend some time, have a look around, have a think, see which ones are your favorites, bum bum bum. So I remember walking around all the way around the room and thinking, oh hell, I'm in trouble here, because not one of my photos was on the wall anywhere. And I was like, oh God. And Mr. Littlewood was not a teacher to mess with. he would have no hesitation in throwing a chalkboard rubber across the kids, or, give you a clip round the ear. I love the man. I really do. I had a lot of respect for him, and I wish I could meet him today and tell him what he meant to me. But he, once we'd all sat down, he started walking around the room, pointing to photographs, and he'd walk around and go, here's a picture of a church. Here's another bloody picture of a church. And he was always very, very honest about things. And he gave up as he went around halfway around this room. Then he walks to the front of the class and pulls this curtain back. And behind the curtain was all my photos. And I sunk in the chair at that moment because I thought, oh, here it comes. And then he started talking positively about the photos that I'd taken, and I started slowly coming back up. And some of my classmates were like, but hold on a minute, that's just a person sitting on the that's a person, that's not a church. And Mr. Littlewood was like, but John's a street photographer. A 13-year-old kid, I had no idea what that meant. Oh. And he started asking me, why did you take this picture? And believe you me, actually, if you couldn't tell him, you were in trouble. He would scream at you for wasting his time, wasting the film, and that. And I was like, well, it just intrigued me, because I came from Bury St. Edmunds and Thetford, small towns where, to me, nobody sat outside and had their lunch. So I was intrigued by little things like this. I was intrigued by a couple kissing in front of St. Paul's Cathedral. And I was able to sort of tell him what drew me to the photo, to each one of the photos. And he was like, no, you're a street photographer. And I was like, you keep saying this. And in the end, what is that? I don't understand. And he showed me Bruce Davidson's work. And then he started showing me Cartier-Bresson. And, I'm trying to think who the other photographer was. Diane Arbus. He started showing me their stuff. And I was like, you mean I can do this for a job? And, that was it. From that moment on, I was absolutely hooked. And it was street photography, the whole thing. And I did a GCSE and a City and Guilds at the same time. So I had to do two separate portfolios and two separate projects and that I had to put together. But both were street photography, but a little bit different from each other. But, and that was it. It just, from that moment on, it just stuck. But I did give it up for a while. And I came back to it full time. I mean, I always had a camera in my hand. Every time someone saw me, I had a camera. I was always photographing. But I started picking it back up seriously, I'd like to say about 2007, 2008. And then it's in the last 5 years, it's really sort of took off again. I've gotten really, really serious about it. But, that was how I got into it. It was all thanks to a mad lunatic of a teacher called Mr. Littlewood. The photos of Bruce Davidson still to this day, I don't own many photography books. I own a handful, but the one book that I do own is Subway. And I'm lucky enough, a couple of years back on my birthday, I got to spend 2 days. I went to a talk at Somerset House with Bruce Davidson. I met him actually that day as well. I met Martin Parr and David Hunn. Then the following day, I got to hang out with him for a few hours in the gallery in London and met, you know, got to chat and actually found out there's a photograph in the book that to this day still resonates with me. And I always, for years, every time I looked at the photograph, I always thought that's either A, it's staged, or B, that photographer has got the biggest set of brass balls I've ever seen on a man. It was one or the other. Turns out it wasn't staged. You know, it was just, yeah, it was just a phenomenal photograph. And so, yeah, I mean, ever since, like, looking through that work, that body of work, I have been drawn to street photography.
I mean, that's amazing for someone to be told that at such a young age.
Yeah, he was just one of those. I was really lucky with the school I went through. There were several teachers. I actually had two photography teachers, and depending on what Mr. Littlewood was doing, Mr. O'Neill would come in and teach. And he was a little bit softer, not quite as brash, Mr. Littlewood. Then we had our year head was Mr. Harding, and three teachers that were just so influential to everything that I did. And yeah, I mean, most people don't know what street photography is at that age, you know.
No, they still don't.
Yeah, it's funny because, like, when for that first year or so that we were sort of learning how to use the camera, what everything did on a camera, how to develop, how to, you know, how just all the basics that you go through. In that first year, I had no idea there was different genres of photography. I just figured photography was photography. I didn't realize there was, you know, certain people that just did landscape or portrait or, you know, architecture or wildlife. I had no idea. I just figured photography was photography. So that day to discover that there was a genre to it and something that you could focus on that one thing. That was a huge eye opener for me. And yeah, to this day, it's something that I still remember very, very fondly. I mean, it's probably anybody that's read my blogs. I've written interviews for magazines and that. I mean, that story's been told so many times, but I guess, you know, people are always intrigued, which is nice. It's kind of nice. People sort of take the time, really. But it's been an interesting journey, to say the least. I mean, my first digital camera was 2008. I think it was 2008 was when I first went to digital, and that was a Nikon, a big DSLR. So it's definitely been an issue. I had to learn it all over again, or try and remember what I'd learned. But it was amazing how quick it all came back to me. And yeah,
well, I think both are really good skills, because a lot of people now say that to learn analog, it's actually pretty good to have a digital camera because you get the instant feedback. So if you get, you know, a fully manual lens, teach them how to learn exposure and depth of field and stuff, get like the most basic camera you can, you'll pick up analog so easy.
Yeah, there's a young lad that I've done a couple of one-to-ones with him, and he was on one of my last workshops. And when he came on the workshop, I said to him, if you turn up with an analog camera, I'm going to throw you off the workshop. And he was like, what? Yeah. I said, you turn up with a digital camera. And he bought an old Nikon D3100, like entry-level camera. But he had a manual 50mm, I think. Or was it a – actually, might have been a 1.8G. I can't remember, but whatever he had on the camera. And because the two times I'd been out with him, he was struggling. He was hesitating. He was laughing about with exposure and stuff. And he was missing really, really good photos.
Right.
But his photography was terrible. There was nothing in his photography. But I could see something in him. And I said to him, I think analog is holding you back. Because you're worried about taking the shot. You're overthinking it. You're worrying about your exposure and everything else. And I think it's actually, it's
really counterproductive.
And when he then, I think it was Monday, he sent me photos and they blew me away. What he got with them.
Wow.
Because he wasn't, if they would have been put in front of me, and I didn't know who took him, his name wouldn't even be on the list. You know, because I'd not seen a standard like that from him, but the photos were phenomenal. And I think now he sort of realised that what analog was. And I still say to him, he still does portraiture and that. And I'm like, if you're going to shoot portraiture, by all means, shoot it in analog. Don't go because
no rush.
Yeah, exactly. If you're doing, you know, but with street photography, it's you've got to be fast. You've got to think about your shot, and you've got to take your time. But it's like it's a contradiction in terms. And whenever I do my workshops, I always tell people take all the time. You've got all the time in the world, but be fast. And they look, they look around at me, and they're like, "Well, hold on." How can I do? I can't do both. I'm like, actually, you can. If you're prepared for it, and what I try to teach is be prepared for it. Watch. You can, if you find a nice spot on Oxford Street, for example, you know, and you frame it up, you get everything ready. So now your exposure's ready. You can, if you're framing up a scene, you can flick your camera into manual, and get manual focus, get it all lined up, get everything ready. Then you've got all the time in the world, and all you're doing is looking left and right for somebody. And then when you lock on to that subject, watch him, watch him, watch him, bang, take the shot. It's as simple as that. Then look for your next one and just play it like that. So you're having to be fast because you're having to be able to pick out subjects before they come into your frame. But then the second you pick someone up at 100 meters away, you've got all the time in the world, and you can look at, you've already looked at your composition, you've already looked at your background, you know exactly where you want them. As soon as they come into it, just patient snap, and you've got that shot. And that's what I try to teach, you know.
Cool.
And, yeah, it's surprising how many people have come on the workshops and have actually, you know, I've never thought of it like that, and I've never done such a thing. It's like, yeah, I've done a workshop before. I had a route all planned out. I always have a route mapped out for a workshop. Actually, I have three because it all depends on what the weather's doing. But I'll have three routes mapped out, but we got to this one spot and we ended up camping there for 4 hours on a workshop. So I had five people camped out in this one spot for 4 hours, but the photographs we all got, or they all got, I should say, were phenomenal. And I'm like, but I'd never thought about camping in one, everything you could possibly want from the day is right here. And I hear it all too often from a lot of photographers that I only get one good picture a month, you know, or I can shoot five rolls of film and only get one good photo. And I always, what always goes through the back of my mind at that moment is, well, what are you doing wrong? I don't understand what it is you're doing wrong. If you're only going out one day a month, okay, fair enough. But if you're, some of the people that say that to me, they're out every day shooting for 6 to 8 hours a day.
Oh, Jesus, mate, yeah.
How can you only have one good photo a month?
Yeah. I'm that first one. I would maybe go out once a month, and it might depend. on the day, so there could be no one about, and I'll go into town, I'll come back and took one photo.
Yeah.
It was dead, so...
The 7th of September, I went to the Tate Modern, and I was there with a friend of mine, and we spent 11 hours shooting the Tate Modern. And I must have 500 keepers and 217 that I've actually, like, edited slightly or, you know, gone, they're the ones. And that's in 11 hours. And I'm not going to say that all the photos are great. In fact, they're probably all rubbish, if I'm honest. But I liked them. And I just don't get it. I really don't. That does amaze me when I hear sort of comments like that. And I always say to people on a workshop, if you take your time and you look for your subject and you know what it is you're going to do, you can come away with a hell of a lot more than, you know, one photograph. It's, you know, you might have that one image that really, really sort of resonates and stands out and that. But, I mean, walking to work the other day, I took the photograph of the dog in the van behind the driver's seat. I took that with my iPhone.
Which is a fantastic photo.
The funny part about that was I was live on Instagram when I saw it. And I was live on Instagram and I was like, I don't believe this, the one. And I thought, shall I take my Ricoh out? Shall I take it? Because I haven't done a shift in Jessup's in months. And I got a phone call saying Barney had food poisoning. Can I cover his shift?
Oh, right.
And I was like, yeah, come on in. Because I just help out in there. And I thought, should I take it? Nah, I won't need it. Nah, I'll leave it at home. And then I literally see that shot and I just think, yeah, I should have had my camera with me. But I still got it. That's the important thing. I still got the shot. Yeah.
Oh, no, that's cool. So let's just really cover quickly technology. Has technology helped you in your pursuit of street work? Has it made it worse? Do you envy something you haven't got?
No, I don't envy anything I haven't got. I'm content with what I've got. Up until this year, I had the Fujifilm X-T2 and 56 1.2. And I've enjoyed shooting with that thing immensely. I love that because of the tilt screen. I think the tilt screens on cameras is amazing.
Great.
I love that. I know there's a lot of photographers out there who, oh no, you must shoot through the viewfinder and that. Well, for something as simple as a tilt screen, for me, I struggle getting up and down, getting old. And the tilt screen helps me immensely, and I love that. But earlier this year, I was out with Sean Tucker and a few other photographers, Harley and a couple of others. And I don't know how we got on the subject of the Ricoh GR, but we did. And Sean pulls one out of his bag. And I was like, can I try it? So I put my own SD card in, and off I went. And first thing I did was I popped the flash and I started like literally going right up to people, right in the face with the Ricoh, flashing them, taking their image. And I fell in love with the camera. I absolutely fell in love with it to the point where I bought one the following day. and I have been shooting now with the Ricoh for 3-4 months. And I have absolutely fallen in love with that little camera. And, you know, it's got no viewfinder on it. You're literally using the back screen. That you've got something as simple as like the snap focus on it. So I can set my distance to 2 meters. If I half press the shutter, it will autofocus. But if I just press the shutter button down in one continuous movement, it just takes the image at 2 meters. And to have is phenomenal. And the reason I shoot with the Fujifilm and the Ricoh is because the JPEGs that are coming out of the cameras, they're solid. You know, you hardly need to do anything with them. Yeah. You know, my editing on a photograph is maximum 30 seconds. If I spend any longer on a photograph than 30 seconds, I delete it. So technology-wise, the way digital has moved and got to the stage where the JPEGs coming out of these little cameras are just so powerful. I love that. But yeah, I mean, a few years back, I'd have been like, oh, I really want a Leica, or, you know, I'd like to have a Phase One or something like that. But to be perfectly honest, if I won the lottery tonight, I would stick with my Ricoh GR2 and my Fujifilm X-T2 and my 56mm, because I don't feel as if I need anything else. I suppose we've all been there where, you know, I used to have a backpack, and in the backpack was, you know, a big tripod and six lenses and Lee filters and, you know, all the gear. I never used any of it. And I in the end, I sold it all off. I like the simplicity of one camera, one lens, one focal length. You're not messing about. That's the focal length you have. You learn to shoot with that. And that is it. You know, I see it all too often when I'm out and photographers have got four cameras on them, and they've got this lens and that lens and this lens, or they've got one camera, but they've got six lenses. And, you know, you're walking through an area in Cambridge or somewhere, and they're constantly stopping and switching lens. I'm just like, just pick one. Just pick one. And shoot. And so technology for me, yes, things like the tilt screen, the snap focus on the Ricoh GR and the JPEG that come out of these cameras, I think is wonderful. But I also think that there are too many people out there that get all sort of tied up in the latest camera gear. Like, I've been asked, if I had a pound for every time I've been asked this, I'd be able to buy one. But I've been asked, why did I pick the GR2 over the GR3? Because I was late to the Ricoh game. And I was like, because I don't need a touchscreen. And I want a flash. That's why I bought the Ricoh GR2. And then you go, yeah, but you could have bought this flash gun. But just wanted that little camera. That's it. That's what I wanted. And I'm happy with it, man. It's just, yeah, I've got no, I don't need to upgrade every 5 minutes. I don't see the need, you know. Every so often I borrow, I sold him my X-Pro 1. And every so often I'll say to him, hey, listen, I'm going to London. Can I borrow the X-Pro 1 again? And I love the images that come out of that camera. That camera's, what, 10 years old?
Yeah.
9 years old? 9, 10 years old? Still a phenomenal camera. So, yeah, technology, I think technology moves too fast, to be fair. And I have just shot with the X-Pro 3. For a little bit, and yeah, nice camera, fast, great. Would I buy one? No, don't need it. Happy with what I've got. I think I've shot with a camera from every manufacturer out there, and yeah, more than happy with what I've got. I don't envy what someone else has. I think what for me took me that day from to then make the decision to buy the Ricoh, well, shooting with the 56mm, obviously that's an 84mm focal length, and I just wanted something wider.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to, I kept thinking, should I just buy the 23mm? No, because then I'm going to be changing lenses and I don't want to do that. And then Christian Cross, who is a phenomenal street photographer and a great friend, he's been shooting with the Ricoh for ages. In fact, Christian sold, I think he's had three since I've met him. But But he sold his Ricoh GR2 and actually bought the Leica Q. And although he was producing good work with the Leica Q, he never bonded with the camera. And he sold his Leica Q and went back to the Ricoh. And his work has grown and gotten better again. So just because you got the latest, greatest, most expensive camera isn't going to make you a better photographer. And I think people need to realize that. And so for me, camera gear isn't important. I'm sure you get it. I'm sure most photographers get it, where what is the best camera for street photography? What lens should I have? And I always say to people, look, I can tell you what's best for me, but that isn't necessarily going to be what's best for you. So, yeah, if anybody out there is listening and you're wondering, you know, that you want to shoot, God knows why you never want to, but you'd want to shoot like me and you think, well, having a 56 millimeter, you're going to get the images. No, it doesn't work like that. Find what works for you and then stick with that. It's that easy, really. And don't worry about all the latest gear coming out. You know, it's a lot of the time it's there just to fool you and just to get your money. It's not there to make you a better photographer. It's just there to make the companies richer. That's all it's for. But yeah.
That's why I love my medium format. Waist level finder.
Yeah.
You're less apparent when you're looking at people. Like you've said with your Ricoh, if you're doing 2 foot, if you're shooting wide enough, then your field of view is
it's substantial.
You don't feel it's so big anyway, isn't it?
It makes you actually using. I wasn't sure how I was going to get on with it because I've always shot between 50 to 75 millimeters always. And so when I was shooting full frame, obviously 35 millimeter, I'd shoot with 50 millimeter focal length. So I wasn't sure how I was going to get on with shooting 28 millimeter. I didn't know whether or not it was going to work for me, but some of the best photography or some of the best photos I've taken, I think I've got with that Ricoh. I mean, the photography zine that I put out, that is some of my favorites that I've taken with the Ricoh GR in that first 12 weeks that I had the camera. I just thought it'd be really interesting to put a little book together and, you know, to show people what I've been capturing with it. It's a camera I've bonded with immensely. And now I don't even think about the Fuji. I just grab the Ricoh. Because, you know, the other reason, it's funny actually, because the other reason why I went with the Ricoh, the big one was I wanted something a bit wider. But the other reason, funny enough, was sometimes carrying the Fuji, I get really, really tired with it really quick. And just the thought of taking that bloody camera out, you know, that's me health wise, you know. So I wanted something that I didn't have to take a bag out. I didn't have to take, you know, I could literally just put a spare battery in my back pocket, a spare SD card, and go out with this tiny little camera. And that was it. And it gives me so much freedom to shoot. And so anybody out there looking for advice on what to buy what you're comfortable with. Simple as that.
For me, it's the biggest freaking camera you can buy.
In that case, the Phase One. Which is a fantastic. I mean, I've shot with the Phase One. It's a fantastic camera, the image quality, but it's not ideal for street photography, unfortunately.
A big challenge.
Yeah, exactly.
No, that's fair. So where do your zines and your blogging and books all fit into what you're trying to do then?
It's funny, actually. The blog, oh, my God. I mean, me writing, I'm dyslexic. I write the way I speak, which I know is wrong. You're not meant to do that. But that all came, funny enough, from meeting Bruce Davidson and having a chat with him. And I'd been, as I'd come up to London, I was just taking random photos. And I wasn't sort of focusing and listening to him in his talk and then meeting him and chatting with him. He'd said, focus on, you know, like, so if you're going to go to London for the day, try and focus on one thing and then write about it. So come home and write about your day.
Yeah.
And I just thought, that's not a bad idea. So I sat back and thought about it. And then I think the first blog I ever wrote was about London taxi drivers. And I couldn't figure out how to write it because, like I say, I'm not a writer. I'd written it and I sent it to a friend of mine. She read it and she said, this is terrible. She was like, you're spelling, your punctuation. She said, it's awful. So oh, thanks. And she said, you're trying to write rather than try to be you. You need to be you.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So I sat here and I was thinking. And then it was Sherlock, the first episode of Sherlock come to mind. And where the taxi driver says, nobody notices the taxi driver. It's just the back of someone's head. And I wrote the line of dialogue. I can't remember the exact line I wrote, but I wrote the line of dialogue and I put Sherlock a study in pink. Well, tonight I did notice the taxi driver and then I just started writing from there. So the blogs all came from the blog, the scenes, the projects, all that stemmed from a chat with Bruce Davidson. And he was right. You put your photos in context, you give them some background. Yeah. And otherwise, they're just random photos that, you know, that most people aren't going to. It's interesting, actually, because from doing the blogs and putting, you know, doing projects, and I mean, I've got about 6-7 projects all on the go at the minute. So depending on where I am is what I'm shooting. But if you look on Instagram, and I know Instagram isn't the best sort of thing to look at, but if you look on Instagram and look at the accounts that do incredibly well, the ones that have the big followers. So for the sake of argument, if you look at Mark Fernley, 80,000 followers, I think Mark's got now. But if you look through his feed, it's consistent all the way through. And you might get the odd color image on there, but the majority of them are dark contrast, black and white.
Yeah.
If you go to someone like Josh Jack, Josh is a high saturation through, you know, like little detail shots shot through the window and that kind of thing. So everything sort of lines up. And if you go to Sean's the same. But if those guys put a photograph up, so Mark's done it in the past where I've said to Mark, look, he sent me a photograph and I'm like, man, I'm love that. You need to put that up. It does nothing. He doesn't get many likes or comments or not. He gets a lot, but he doesn't get what he gets with everything else. So it shows that projects and putting the photographs in some kind of context and that really does work. So, you know, again, that's something that I teach as well, is that find your path, find your style. I'm intrigued at the minute because Christian's about to start his blogs. So he's just getting his website up and running. I'm really, really intrigued to see what Christian writes. And yeah, it's kind of strange because from the blogs, I've gotten a lot of friends through them. I get a lot of comments. I get a lot of messages. And it allows me to be quite personal on the blogs as well. That I love. Yeah, it's nice. But
it's different now.
Yeah. If someone would have told me 5 years ago, I'd have been writing blogs and I'd have had 12, 13,000 people coming to the blog every week. I'd have been like, you're out of your mind. And sometimes I can read a blog back and I'll be like, did I wrote that? So it's, but yeah, they just, yeah, it all came from Bruce Davidson. Stay with him. The man was still teaching me 30 years after he taught me, you know, that book. And seeing his body of work, that inspired me. And looking at those photos, they taught me. And then 30 years later, I meet the man, he's still teaching me. So it was almost like coming full circle. But yeah, I don't know. I still can't believe people read the blogs. I still can't believe people have bought the zines. And I can't believe people watch the live videos I do.
I think the biggest thing that sells is character. Want to see a person that don't want to see a corporate image anymore.
No, I think we're all fed up with the corporate image. I think we like seeing that individual, the person that is, you know, that I think why people might be drawn to me, I mean, I could be completely wrong here, but I think it's because I speak my mind. I'm not fake. I tell it as it is. Yesterday, there was a gentleman. I don't know whether or not his comment was meant or he was saying it as a joke. I always get really nice sort of comments off him. He always watches live videos and that, but I'm not going to mention his name. But I met a friend in Starbucks yesterday who's a photographer, and her work is shit. Sorry, I hate to use that word, but it is. It's terrible. It's just bland, boring studio portrait work, which doesn't interest me in the slightest. So yes, it's beautifully composed and yes, it's beautifully lit and all of that, but there's no emotion or anything to it. And she then pulled out, she's a magazine, BIPP magazine, British photography thing, and she got some photos printed in there from, she'd been to an old people's home where she'd had a very negative view. I think her mother had passed through one, and she went in there and she photographed, and the photos she showed me blew me away. They blew me away. If someone would have shown me them photos and said, who do you think took them? Her name never would have come into my head, and because they were so different, but they were so, oh my God, they were so emotional. They were just, yeah, they brought me to tears looking at them. They were amazing. And I went live on Instagram, and I, you know, she was sat right in front of me, and I was like, she takes nothing but rubbish. If you go onto her feed before she has a chance to delete it, you'll see how bad her stuff is. And she was sitting there like, what the? And I got this little message saying, you're very rude. And then, funny enough, that person then messaged saying, yeah, you're right. It's not very good. Not compared to the stuff you're showing. So I think it was in jest, but I think that's why people watch it, is because I don't hold back. I tell the truth, man. I'm you know, I've had people who've asked me to critique the work, why anybody would want me to do it, but they do. And I'm always honest. I'm not gonna lie. If I think the photograph's terrible, I'm gonna tell you it's terrible. And I do that on the workshops as well. But I always try and find the positive as well. So there'll always be something good about it. Well, saying that, probably not, but I always try and find something positive with it and then take it from there. So yes, you got into a nice position to take the photograph. However, you know, so you should always give compliments before you, you know, and I open myself up on Instagram quite a bit to, I want people to critique my work. You know, I think so. Yeah. I can't remember what the question was, but hopefully I answered it.
No, that's all right, man. Obviously, you've spent quite a lot of time, as we were talking about, in the Tate, doing projects and shooting people. And one of these was a mutual friend, Matt Jerams at Capital Faces.
Yes. We went.
Shout out.
Yeah, he turned up one day, and I said to him, "Said, look, I've got a membership. Come on, I'll get you in." And we went through the Olaf exhibition together. Really great guy as well. That was the first time I'd met him. Obviously, we chatted quite a bit online. And he sent me a message earlier saying, say hello. And I was like, I just texted him back and I was like, yeah, if I remember. And I did. I remembered. But the Tate Modern, oh, my God. I don't know what the hell Capital thought of me when he saw me shooting in there. But I don't know what it is, man. That building, it's alive. The building's alive. You can go there one day and she looks moody, and you go there another day and she's bright and she's open and she's welcoming. It sounds crazy. I know it sounds crazy, but the building feels organic. And I'm drawn to it in a big way. And I've always been drawn to the Tate Modern. And I've always tried to, like, everybody has taken a photograph on the spiral staircase in there. We've seen it 1,000 times. And I've never taken one there because I don't want to take a photograph where everyone else has taken a photograph. So whenever I go into the Tate Modern, I always try to look for something a little bit different. And a lot of the time, the 56mm that I shoot with on the Fuji will give me that different look, because a lot of people will shoot in there with a 50 or a 35mm, and there's not a lot of people that will go in there with a longer focal length. However, what I've been finding is I've been shooting a lot with the Ricoh GR in there. But there's 10 floors to the Tate Modern, and everybody seems to go to the same two places. The spiral staircase and the big window on level 4. But there's 10 floors to this building. It's like, go and look somewhere else. And I found some great spots in the Tate Modern where nobody's taken photographs before. And in fact, I always get messages today, the picture that I put up, you know, where did you take that? Tate Modern. Yeah, but whereabouts? In the Tate Modern. I'm not telling you where, because I don't want 50 bloody photographers going into the same thing, getting the shots I've got. But yeah, there's just something about it. I don't know what it is. The building has intrigued me ever since the first time I went in there many, many years ago. And at the minute, you've got the, now I'm probably going to butcher this gentleman's name, but Olaf Ellison, I think is how you pronounce his name, who's got an exhibition on at the minute. And Instagram has been flooded with photos from the exhibition, but nobody has shot that exhibition the way I've done it. I've shot in that exhibition. I've been through that exhibition over 100 times now. And in some cases I've spent 5-6 hours at a time in that exhibition. The fog room, most people, when they go in, they'll literally do 2 or 3 shots and then they're out. I'll camp out in the fog, and trust me, it's not a good, it becomes very, very disorientating. You start to almost, after about 10 minutes, you start to choke on the stuff, but I'll spend half an hour just camped out. And when you come out, you kind of feel a little bit sticky in it. But and there's photographs I've taken in there which I absolutely adore, but I won't post them. I'm not going to post them until the exhibition is over, because nobody has shot or found the spots that I've found. Because believe you me, I've been looking as well, just to make sure. But I don't know what it is about the Tate Modern. There's something about the building. But in London, what I tend to find is photographers shoot in the same spots, Soho, Chinatown, Piccadilly. And now, thanks to me, and I don't think Mark Fernley is ever going to forgive me, everybody's heading down to the Tate now. But I now am trying, I'll only go to Soho and Chinatown either to meet up with other photographers or to shoot flash in and around that area. Other than that, I'm St. Paul's, Pagnostic Square, the Barbican, Canary Wharf, Islington, places like that. I no longer go to the usual haunts. I go all over the place. And you can see this spicy meatball, Josh, on Instagram. And if you look at Josh's work, he shoots all over London, Twickenham. You know, he's shot in Kew Gardens, places like that. He's all over the place, Josh. And his photography, you know, that he shoots in London is absolutely phenomenal. So, for me, I no longer go to the standard place. And even when I do now, I don't really shoot that much. Because, you know, there's only so many photos you can take of a Chinaman stood behind a window. Yeah. You know, it just gets boring after a while. This is going to sound like I'm big-headed, but I'm really not. But I can't walk from one end of Chinatown to the other end of Chinatown now without being stopped at least 3 times. Or being followed. Because photographer, because of the live videos and all of that, I get stopped all the time, or I get followed. You know, and then I'll come home and there'll be a message on Instagram with a photo of me in Chinatown. Oh, I saw you today. Yeah, I saw you as well. and it always bothers me. It's like, if you saw me, just come over and say hello. What the hell? So that's that the Tate is somewhere where I'm going to be shooting for a long, long time to come, I think.
That's good. I mean, I noticed, I don't know if anyone else has, your work seems to have changed towards strong shadows.
It's
bits of it have.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's changed. I mean, there's a few photographers out there that have been messaged that have said, oh, have you seen John Hughes? He's copying what you do. And that's not the case at all. Some of those hard shadow photographs, they're from 5-6 years ago. So it's not something that I've changed. It was something that I'd never really posted before. It's one of those things where, how to say, it's one of those things where it almost feels too easy. But then
it's good.
I've always been intrigued. I mean, my influences for photography come from film. So I'm heavily influenced by films like The Exorcist, John Carpenter's Halloween, Ridley Scott's Black Rain, or Ridley Scott's Blade Runner. So the dark shadows, you know, the complete blackness with a little bit of light and a figure.
Yeah.
You know, a haunting figure or something. I've always been intrigued by that. Yeah. So it's and that's what I like about the shadows. And actually my work has changed up a little bit and going more towards that since I started shooting with the Ricoh. So it's that wider focal length again. And having the Ricoh during the summer when you got really good harsh light, it allows for those interesting shadows. As we come into the winter and our days start getting shorter and we start, you know, it starts getting dark at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, you're going to see going back shooting with the Fuji a lot more. So the Ricoh will probably take a back seat. I don't know, it might, I'm saying that, it might not, but I think you're going to find that I'm probably going to start heading back to the Fuji film because I'm going to need that 1.2 f-stop. And so, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's interesting the amount of people that have sort of commented on that and said, you know, you seem to be changing what you're doing. It's not really changing. I've always shot like that. But it all depended on the focal length and what the day was doing. So if you've got a wide focal length, then, and you've got a bright, harsh, sunny day, to me, black and white shadows, sunbursts, that just screams that. But like being somewhere like Cambridge throughout October, November, December, and January, it's more likely going to be the Fuji film and steamy bus windows and shop windows and that kind of thing again. So be interesting to see what I do with the Ricoh, I think, through
months.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how I shoot with it. I am intrigued, actually, because of the flash. I've been waiting for it to get more dark and so I can really pop the flash in. And I've got
get rid of the ambient light a bit.
Yeah. So I've got an idea for a little project with the Ricoh when I'm in London. And I'm probably only going to do it when I'm in London. But, yeah, it'd be interesting to see where I go with it. I don't know. It's one of those things that that I'm adapting to and still adapting to. So I don't know. It's, yeah.
I think there'll be a future book and a future project in Zion coming out here.
Yeah, I'm hoping so. You know, I mean, I'm still trying to put the book together for my... I don't know if you're aware, but I shot for... just over 12 months in my local Starbucks.
Okay.
And that was due to health. I wasn't able to walk as much as I wanted. I was told to stay out of the heat. And so I was going to Starbucks. And I always write for most people don't know, but I write all my blogs in Starbucks. But for some reason, I can't go anywhere else. Can't sit here at home and write one, but I can sit in Starbucks and write it. It's really bizarre. So I write all my blogs in Starbucks. So yeah, it's when I sat in there, I started looking at people and I thought this is really interesting. So I started photographing. And the only trouble is I've got 5,500 photos from that project. And there's at least 10 books in that. There really is, but I've written with the help of a friend of mine, Tom Jevons. He gave me a hand writing the introduction and everything to the book and what it was I was trying to do with the project. I've put the book together 4 or 5 times now, and I'm constantly changing the photographs. I think what I'm going to have to do is hand it off to a publisher or someone. And so you go through the damn thing because I can't choose the photos. It's driving me nuts, even trying. So that's a project that, or a book. And I've had the book up for pre-order once, and then I pulled it because I just couldn't pick the photos, man. It was driving me nuts. I think the first book I put together, there was like 300 pages. This is ridiculous. I'm trying to wean it down to like 60 photos, and I have no idea how I'm going to do that. But yeah, that was an interesting year working on that. And I did post a few photos on an old account I had, and I used to do live videos and show stuff that I got. And from doing that, I started to realize someone said to me that I was an influencer. I don't think I am by any stretch of the imagination, but I get told it all the time. And it's nice that people say that, but I'm really not. But I noticed people started doing something very similar, but they didn't quite get what it was I was trying to do. And all of a sudden, I'd see them in a Costa doing it, or in a Cafe Nero or something. Yeah. And But I'm just thinking, guys, you're in there for like half an hour and you're taking the odd one or two photos. When I go to Starbucks, I will go in there 8 o'clock in the morning and I probably won't come out of there until about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. You know, because I've got noise cancelling headphones. I put them in. I can't hear a damn thing. I might even fall asleep in there. The guy, you know, Izzy, who's now the manager in there, she probably, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if she tried kicking me out a few times. But but yeah, sometimes I'll sit on the couch and I'll fall asleep. And yeah, it's just, I don't know, I find it really relaxing in there. Nice cup of coffee. I'll literally drink one mug of coffee or something. But yeah, I just, there's something about the place. I don't know what it is. That little Starbucks we've got is just amazing. The people are great. You know, a lot of the customers that come in are fantastic. You get the regular customers and then you get new customers and then you get people who are visiting the town. So you get all sorts of sort of characters in there. And I've taken some fantastic shots. I mean, I'm so waiting for the freezing cold and all the windows in there to be all steamed up. And then you've got all the beautiful lights outside. And they just, oh, my God, it's, man, I've sat in there from, I think the longest I've ever sat in there was from like when they opened at 7 o'clock in the morning. And I sat in there till 7 o'clock that night. And I was just, because the light was just changing everywhere. It was just phenomenal. You had this beautiful harsh light working its way across the floor. Then it started getting dark outside. So you had all the windows were all frosted up and you had the light outside, but then you had people sitting in front of that inside silhouetted against it. And then you go the other side of them. And then you had people walking past outside that were silhouetted and, oh my God. And it was just like click, 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 click. And my wife turned up and she said, how long have you been in here? And, you know, Ben or Elliot or someone would be like, it's been in there all day since we stood outside waiting to come in this morning. And I was like, yeah, because the windows were frost this morning. Yeah. So I sat in here while they completely cleared and defrosted. Now they've all steamed back up again. And I just sat in there and watched it. So for me, if I find somewhere like that, I will camp it. I mean, when people find out that I spent 11, 12 hours of time in the Tate Modern, they're all like, but how, what, why? Is that because the light will start there and end there? And you might go in the morning, be two or three people in there. You might, you know, and then throughout the day, it gets really, really busy. Then an hour before they close again, down to one person again. The whole build, you know, the whole element of it changes. You don't have to walk 20, 30 miles to find an image. Really don't. You can sit down and have a cup of coffee and take 100 photos. And I love that. I just love that. So, yeah, projects, the books, the blog, all of that, all stems from, yeah, it's just what I do.
No, that's cool. Well, thank you so much for that, John. So we are now part of the show where we go into our random questions.
Oh, God. Go on.
Now, Matt famously did some really good answers. I quote him quite often. It's quite cool. So right. I'll set you off with a nice, easy one first. What would Jesus's social media handle be?
Nailmeup.com.
Oh, that's cool. I like that. That's very different.
I'm going to hell for that one.
Meet you down there, mate. Do spiders buy four pairs of the same shoes or different pairs?
Four pairs, same shoes.
You think so?
Yeah. Yeah.
Fair. It's all about the style, isn't it?
Absolutely.
What will be the first fast food to be delivered to the moon?
First fast food? Okay, where do you get these questions?
I'll just make them up, mate.
Oh, fair enough. Sticky toffee pudding.
Oh yeah, that's good. Who's the brewery? Let me get hold of them.
You've got to get them to sponsor the podcast.
Oh god, yeah, I should do. Yeah, amount of time they've been on it.
Yeah.
No, I like that. You find out that I am God after all, and I've been living amongst you all the time, and life was a test. What would you ask me?
I wouldn't ask you anything. I'd punch you. I'd be like, you bastard, what did you stick me and Bury St. Edmunds for? Yeah. Yeah, there you go. Why Bury St. Edmunds? That'd be awesome.
That's the big question. Fair enough. I like that. How does a Dracula shave?
Carefully.
Yeah. Well, he can't see his reflection, can he?
No, exactly. So carefully.
Yeah, that's right. Another easy one for you. We've had imperial measurements. We now use the metric system. But what will be next?
The Brexit. The Brexit.
Well, all measurements are going to cease after that.
Yeah.
We'll have to come up with something, won't we?
Yeah, not exactly sure where that one's going to go.
No, no, it's a big, big thing, that, mate. Not a doubt. Well, your final one. No, this is sane compared, Jesus. right. You get to give a punch, a present, or a pint for each of the following. So you can choose one for each. King John, pint. John Wayne,
pint,
or John Williams.
Oh, definitely a pint. A pint with all three.
Pint with all three?
Yeah. Together. That'd be quite an interesting conversation, wouldn't it?
Bloody would, wouldn't it?
Yeah. No,
I'm not sure if John Wayne would argue with him, though, would he?
No, he was quite a mellow chap, wasn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, he was only on film, wasn't
he? Yeah, no. Yeah, wow. No, a pint with all three. That'd be a really interesting... Oh, my God. I mean, John Williams. Oh.
Fabulous conductor.
Man's a legend. The amount of movie soundtracks that man's done.
Oh.
My favourite movie ever is The Witches of Eastwick with... Jack Nicholson, Cher, Susan Sarandon, and Michelle Pfeiffer. And my favourite soundtrack. And it was scored by the great John Williams. Mm. So, but yeah. No, John Williams, amazing. Strange questions, but there we are.
Thank you for going through that and you survived. Well done, mate.
Well, right. Yeah, no worries.
What I always give chance to the guests is if they want to talk to everybody and tell them where you can find their Instagram, websites, your workshops. So if you want to just have a quick talk to everyone.
You can find me at john.hughes.photography on Instagram. Followers would be totally appreciated. My website is johnhughesphotography.uk. I've got to try and remember all this now. you can find out information about the workshops, the one-to-ones. There, I do them in Cambridge and in London at the minute, but I'm looking at branching out. So I've got no problem with travelling if anyone wants to do a one-to-one. At the minute I've got you ordered my first photography zine. So I've got my first photography scene is out, and it contains photos from the first 12 weeks with the Ricoh GR2. That's £8 collected from me, £10 shipped in the UK or £12 worldwide. What did you think?
Yeah, it's really nice, mate. Yeah, I love seeing street photography, especially black and white.
Just amazing, isn't it?
It's shadows. I don't know. Yeah, It's been a while for me as well. So
the support and everything else that I've been getting from people who have purchased it has been unbelievable, and I can't thank everyone enough. And I've had great feedback from it, which is cool, which is then, as you say, spurs you on to do another one. So so I've still got some in stock, so if anybody wants one, hit me up. And
That's cool.
And then both me and you have got a page that we're hoping to grow on Facebook. I'm just going to go over this, so I'll get the name right. So I'm just opening up Facebook, but it's Pavements // Street Photography. It's a group that both of us are hoping to grow. We're still trying to find a footing, really, as to what we want to do with it. But anybody that writes street photography blogs, come on there and share your blogs with us. Because I love reading people's blogs and following. That's fantastic. And if you've got any ideas about what me and Andrew can do with the page, let us know.
No, thanks for that, John. Obviously, I'll put all the links in the show notes. For anyone listening, they'll go on my website, vlogger.co.uk. So it's easy, just one click and you're looking at John's stuff, then you can get the book ordered there and, you know, sign up, as you said.
Thank you. Can I, okay, question for you before we finish. Where did the name come from?
Photo blogger.
Fair enough. There we go.
It just came out of nowhere, mate.
It's good
news. I wanted a brand, you see, and then I spoke to someone a couple of years back and said, what do you think? He went, I think that's really good, Andy. He had no interest in photography or out, so I thought, you know, he's a great person to ask.
I think it's a great name.
No, cool. No. Well, it's the two things I love. I love writing. I've done it for since uni. That was about 10 years ago.
Okay.
I was forced into writing a blog for uni, part of my coursework, and that's never stopped.
Oh, no. Well, I'm glad you did.
No, thank you, dude.
No, brilliant.
And my final question for you, who would you like to see on a future show? Anyone you can recommend? Appreciate you'll obviously know a lot of street photographers.
I think for me, the one person that I would, the list is long, but for me, the one person that I think would make such an interesting podcast and a chat to would be, without a shadow of a doubt, Christian Cross. Christian, his outlook on photography, what he does, how he approaches it, is absolutely phenomenal. For me, it'd be Christian Cross. Another one that would be absolutely amazing to sit and chat to because of his entire approach to photography is Mark Fernley. So Mark and Christian, I think they do two great podcasts with those guys. They're brilliant. They really are. Christian and Mark, two of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. They'll give you the shirt off their back. They're really, really great guys. I got to say that this year, the people that I have met, the people that I'm hanging around with, the people I'm shooting with, so many names: Jovis, Zach, Simon, Sean, Harley, Fabian, you know, Mark, Christian, James, all these guys and ladies and that, Wendy and that I shoot with, that I've met, the support that I've gotten off of those wonderful people have been unbelievable. Yourself, you know, I'm really, really humbled by it all. The people I've got in my, they're just, you know, Barney as well. So many great people. I've never, at no point in my life have I ever had this many people that I can call a friend. It's fantastic. They're wonderful artists. They're wonderful people. And I am so grateful to have every single person that I've got in my life that's in my life today. Everyone is so positive. It's humbling.
It's cool, man. Yeah.
To have that and to have the support from everyone. So thanks to the podcast gives me an opportunity to say thank you to everyone. It's and again for yourself as well, thanks for inviting me on. And I probably rambled way too much, didn't answer any of your questions. But
you answered the strange ones.
I did answer the strange ones. Very, very strange answers indeed. Yeah, never going to live that one down, I swear. I shouldn't have said it, but there we are, never mind. But no, I appreciate it, Andrew, I really do. And I think the work you're doing with the podcast and everything is phenomenal. And I really hope you continue with it because it's just amazing, you know. Great to sit in. And the amount of times I sit in Starbucks, got my headphones on, I'm listening to you and the podcast. Oh, cheers, so dude. Fantastic. I'm so glad Barney told me about the podcast, and I'm glad we've connected. So it's fantastic. I really appreciate it, buddy.
No, that's cool. And I think this is the thing that we're finding more and more like-minded people now.
Absolutely.
And it just feels like your world's getting better every day and every week, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. Without a shadow of a doubt. Yeah. No, I really appreciate that, buddy.
No, that's cool. And let's hope we can get that December the 4th together, mate. That'd be awesome.
No, that'd be cool. Yeah, I'll make sure I'll have a word with Barney.
Yeah, no, that's cool. So thank you for your time, mate. I know you've already left an iTunes review, so that was obviously appreciated. All we can say is anyone listening, please do remember to leave a review. It helps me. I know that you do appreciate me putting this time in. It's a passion project for me. I do it in my spare time. I am a dad. I work full time. So, I do put a lot of time into this.
No, I'm sure everyone appreciates it.
Yeah. No, and it's nice to hear feedback from people like yourself who's actually been listening as well. So.
Absolutely. It's we have to support great people who are doing great things. And the podcast is a phenomenal project, mate, and I really hope you carry on with it.
Yeah, no, that's cool. And the good thing is I'm getting to talk about this stuff next week at a local college.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, so I'm really excited about that. So I've took a day off so I can do a bit of prep. It's all nice, isn't it?
Cool, absolutely. Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But yeah, like I say, really appreciate it, my man.
So thanks a lot. And we will speak soon, John.
Take it easy.